So I walk in down the hallway of the lobby here, and everybody's like, oh my God, that was him. Was that Fat Joe? Was that really him? From NPR and Futuro Media, it's Latino USA. I'm Maria Hinojosa. Today, a conversation with rapper and actor Fat Joe. In the early 1990s, a young MC from the South Bronx exploded onto the hip-hop scene. His name was Jose Antonio Cartagena, a.k.a. Fat Joe. Fat Joe is a rapper of Puerto Rican and Cuban descent, and if you don't already recognize his debut single, Flojo, then I'm pretty positive you'll recognize these hits. This year, he'll be releasing a new album called Family Ties with Dre of the production duo Kool & Dre. But along with over two decades in music, Joe has also begun to create a steady career in acting, most recently in the 2017 Netflix series, She's Gotta Have It.
I want to dance.
Is you bugging out, Shemeca? You want to dance? You see them girls professional.
Yeah, and I want some stage time, just like
that. And in the new comedy, Night School, starring Kevin Hart and Tiffany Haddish.
If you're not going to do the work, drop the class.
No, I'm going to do the work. You'll see.
The movie is a story about a group of misfits attending night school in the hopes of getting their GEDs. And in it, Joe plays the character of Bobby, who's an inmate who joins the night class through Skype. Fat Joe and I talked about his experience of growing up in the South Bronx, his beginnings in hip-hop, and about his new role in the film Night School. You know, the first time that I heard about you was when I was in the Bronx with a group of guys known as the Tats Crew.
Oh, yeah, that's my crew.
Love those guys.
We've been together over 20-something years. And so Tat's crew was really T-A-T, and then T-S is Terror Squad, and we merged the crews together. We both used to write graffiti back in the days, and that's how it became the Tat's crew. It's part of Terror Squad.
They're known as the best memorial wall artists in the Bronx, and now they even have a budding graphic arts company.
I was a reporter here at NPR. I was the first Latina correspondent at NPR.
This first wall, they point out, is about 14 feet high and 8 feet wide. It's a huge, spray-painted, blossoming red rose.
They used to joke and say that I was the Bronx bureau chief because I love spending time in the Bronx because, you know, at that time, the Bronx was very misunderstood.
This is how many years ago?
1995.
Yeah, that was the time. They call the mural kings. In the Bronx, when somebody who's really loved in the neighborhood passes away, we do murals for them. The only tattoo I have in my arm is in memory of Tony, my best friend who got killed in the Bronx. We had one of the most famous murals in the Bronx. The Tats crew did it. And it was of Tone, and it looked just like him.
I saw it.
Yeah, and it's crazy because it lasted for so many years. It was in movies and everything.
Makes me think about the fact that you were in the Bronx at a time when, you know, it was rough, right? There was
a
lot.
I grew up in the Bronx. We just
it was scary sometimes, but also there was so much love, right?
Growing up in the Bronx, although I grew up so poor. So when they try to do stories on me and documentaries, they always ask me for pictures from when I was a little kid. And when I go around all the time to my family, like, do you have any pictures of I was a kid? Do you have any pictures? I can't find none. So one day I asked my Uncle Angel, he's a pastor. And, you know, he should never lie, right? So I went up to Uncle Angel. I said, yo, Uncle Angel, why is it we don't have no pictures of when I was a kid? He was like, yo, we were so poor, we didn't have a camera. That's the answer. And I was like, wow, we was that poor. But I also remember that time. Family getting together every Sunday, family enjoying each other, everybody loving each other. Violence wasn't so bad. I mean, you know, I'm talking about disco. I'm talking about the Bee Gees.
What's your favorite disco sound?
Man, I don't know. I love Franz Joly. Mm-hmm. Come to me.
God, I love that.
Da, na, na, I remember that growing up. It was something else.
There's a thing that happens, though, after this like really great period where you're perhaps not understanding how challenged mm-hmm. you are economically, mm-hmm. but the violence does start to come, right? Mm. What was your understanding then of why that was happening in your community?
Well, what happened was bullying was at an all-time high, especially me being a Latino. I grew up in a neighborhood that was like 99% Black. And they had never seen a Latino like me because I was like the conquistador. I would never take no disrespect from nobody. In the hood, if you want to call it the Bronx, the more people respected you and feared you, the more powerful you felt. So that was like the first time I felt power. And so I remember, you know, for all the wrong reasons, my name and reputation was getting out there so much that I remember going my first day to high school. And I walked to the high school with about 150, 200 kids the first day. And I remember everybody just in the background like, who's that? That's Joey Crack. That's Terror Squad. It's Fat Joe. It's just, and I was just, my ego was just boosting to another level to where you have all the girls like, but who is he? And they was like, you know, that's Fat Joe. That's so before rap music, just for being a bad guy in the hood, you know? It's crazy.
Where did you get that?
I have no clue because everybody in my family is like the nicest people in the world. So I don't know how that happened. I was technically, before I became successful, the black sheep of the family. It was like, you know, El hijo de María, ese está, es un loco.
Tell me about your mom and dad. Like, what were they doing?
Well, my mom's is Puerto Rican. My dad is Cuban.
Each born on each island?
Yeah, my mother was born in Puerto Rico, but came over here to the Bronx since she was 6 months old. My grandmother and grandfather met in Puerto Rico in Santurce, and my grandfather worked at a bodega. And he met my grandmother. He told her he was going to marry her. She's his wife. They married each other like 15, 16 years old, and they came to the Bronx and never left. They never left the Bronx. They never even went back to Puerto Rico. So when my father came over here, his sister lived right over my mother's crib. And, of course, he seen my mother. Blonde hair, green eyes, you know, beautiful.
Blonde hair, green eyes.
Yes.
Puerto Riqueña.
That's right.
So a lot of people are like, wait, what? And it's like, actually, that is not uncommon in Puerto Rico.
Well, I'm figuring that in the South Bronx, it was very uncommon. She fell in love with my father. You know, he's a charmer. He was on her. And they've been together ever since.
Aww.
And thank God they're still together now.
How many years?
Jesus Christ. I'm 48. They've been together at least 52
wow.
years or something. And they are inseparable. They're like, they're no good. Like, you can't argue with one. You can't put my mother against him. You know, she's with him, like, all the way.
What's the lesson for you of that long-term relationship?
Well, that's why I've been with my wife 23 years, man. That's why I've been with my wife 23 years. Family is so important to me, man. It's a hard, hard fight to be together. It's so easy to just walk away from each other. You know, it's so important for the Latino kids watching what's going on. We like letting them know that, you know, this is possible. And hip-hop.
Why is it important for you to say, as a Latino man in the entertainment business, I want to talk about the fact that I've been married for 23 years, that a relationship like marriage is based on love and a lot of hard work. Why is that important for you to kind of talk about?
Because I feel like real men are about family. I like to think I'm very involved in my daughter's life. I'm a dance dad. Like, I go to all her dances.
Oh, I
do
that.
As much as I can, right? But, you know, I got to work. I'm on the road. So I go to this Catholic school, and there's so many rich parents there. because we live in South Beach and everybody got mansions and all. So they almost look down upon the rapper Fat Joe because they're the holiest people. Because there's a stereotype, like there's a perception of, I don't care how much money this guy got, he's from the hood. And then these people who grew up like, you know, the Wallingfords of the Latinos. You know the deal. So my daughter grew up from pre-kindergarten with the same girls, right? And sure enough, people I think are madly in love and husband and wife, they just falling off. Divorce, 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 divorce. The most holiest, the guy who thinks he wears the bow ties, that this, divorce. You know, I love this interview because I think we get into some real stuff about life. To stay together, to give my daughter and give my sons a sense of like, yo, this is our family. This is our home. You know, my dad, he's a rap star, whatever, but he ain't never leave us. He's with us. You know what I'm saying? That's what it's all about.
Coming up on Latino USA, my conversation with Fat Joe continues. Stay with us. No te vayas.
Hi, I'm Daniel Alarcón, host of NPR Spanish language podcast Radio Ambulante. We're back with a new season, with 36 stories from all over Latin America and the Latino community here in the U.S., from one of the most controversial trials in Puerto Rico's history to the Venezuelan migrant crisis. Listen to Radio Ambulante on the NPR One app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, we're back, and we're going to continue with our portrait of Fat Joe. Now we dive into what made him the artist that we know today. All right, so let's talk about your beginnings in hip-hop. Like, did you have any hip-hop heroes when you were growing up?
I was just at the Hispanic Heritage Awards, and I had the honor of giving an award to Crazy Legs Cologne. Crazy Legs Cologne is like a superhero to me. He's like Superman, Batman.
Rock, rock, rock. Hey, 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 hey. Are you ready?
Growing up in the Bronx and being so in love with hip-hop music, he was really the only Latino icon at the time. And he was 10 years old. He was already a legend. He was a myth. He was somebody you couldn't see. You couldn't. He was Crazy Legs, rock steady. And you was like, oh, my God. And he was there at the birth. So when I started doing rap music, they would call it black music. Right? And I was like, yeah, black music. 20 years later, after rapping, I go back to the early days of hip-hop music. Half of the jams was Latino. Half of the jams was black. So the black dude was rapping, but DJ Charlie Chase was DJing. Ruby D, all these Latinos was in there. So I was like, I had to go back and be like, yo, this ain't black music. This is black and Latino music originally. Now it's everybody's.
But how
now
did that
happen? Whatever you want.
But how did that happen that, you know, for a long time there was a sense? And of course, a lot of retail.
Well, what happened was the people on the forefront were definitely black. So the number one rappers, you know, the LL Cool J's, the Slick Ricks, the Melly Mel's, all of them was black. You know, we never had like no rap Latino superstars till, I want to say, Cypress Hills. And then Fat Joe and Big Pun came along. I support Pun in anything he does, anything he loves. A brother from another mother sent for the above. Then we had Curious George, we had the Beatnuts, we had a bunch of guys that were putting dents in the game. You know, when they asked me recently about Trap Español and everything that's going on, it's You know, we talked about this 20 years ago. We said one day Latinos were going to grow at an enormous rate where you were going to have to respect whatever we're doing. And that's a fact now.
So in some ways, it's the opposite of the Trump reality where we're being attacked.
Well, Trump, you know, I was a fan of Trump.
You mean a long time ago or you mean just
recently?
No,
a long time ago. I was a fan of Trump. I was actually excited for a New Yorker, a businessman, to run for president. So I watched this first speech.
Wait, first tell me why you were a fan, just kind of straight up.
Because I used to see him in New York. He was inspiring to be successful like that. So I thought maybe I could see eye to eye with him. But the first time he came down the escalator and he called Mexicans drug dealers, I was watching the TV screen. I was like, yo, this is unbelievable. Like, what? Because New York City is so diverse that you can't believe a guy that grew up in New York City, the most diverse city in the planet Earth, is a racist.
So you turned away.
Oh, yeah. And I really will never respect him for what he did to Puerto Rico. It's been a year since Puerto Rico. He treated us as second-class citizens. He went to Puerto Rico and threw paper towels at people like they were peasants. He definitely does not respect Puerto Rican people. He looks at us like trash. Like, yo, these people are trash. We're not going to spend one American dollar helping these people. We don't care.
So can you just take us to the point where, you know, you in the beginning of your career, the record companies, they were all saying, no, there's no market for Latinos in hip hop.
I could tell you some crazy thing. I had to fight to get rap music in the Puerto Rican parade. So there was this guy named Ramon Velez, and he ran the parade. And I would go to him every single year and be like, yo, Latinos love hip hop. As far as hip hop, I'll never take the route of saying, you know, it was harder for me because I was Latino or whatever the case may be, because sometimes I think I got more black fans than even Latino fans. I've been embraced. I started out in the Apollo Theater. I went to amateur night. I won 4 weeks in a row. I came in first place. That's where I met Red Alert, who I gave my demo to, and he played it on the radio, and it became my first single, Flojo, that went on to go number one in America. So I never used the I'm Latino card. I just always felt like if you're talented, if you're a musical genius, just put your music out and it'll speak for itself.
You know, one of the things, Joe, when you talk about letting things speak for themselves, I think it's something that people really appreciate about you is your honesty about a lot of things. And obviously, we've been experiencing it just in our conversation. Yeah. You talked about after the death of your dear, dear friend, Big Pun, that you actually went through a depression.
Yeah.
And I'm wondering why choose to talk about that and what.
Well, you know, I'm an open book. I'm for the people. When I die, I hope that people carry me in the air and just toss me up and down and say, yo, he did it for us. I'm all about the people. And even though my music is hardcore and it's gangster and it's whatever, you know, I was always hoping that people could see me for who I am. I just want everybody to learn something from me. Depression is a very, very serious thing. And my grandfather died. My sister died. She gave birth. She was in a coma for like 8 months. I had to see my mother at the hospital with my sister every day trying to wake her up. Big Pun died. They all three of them died around the same week. And it was just too much for me. Another thing, if somebody dies right now, we try to go to a quiet place, gather ourselves, get back in the game. I couldn't do it with Big Pun. So any restaurant I went to, the waiter was like, sorry about your brother. If I was stuck in traffic, the car next to him, yo, we love Big Pun. Yo, so it was a constant. So I went to a psychiatrist and she helped me understand myself on so many different levels. So I went to her for 2 years. And I remember one day, every year the Tats Crew does a mural for Big Pun in the Bronx on 163rd and Kelly. And we was out there that night, and we was doing the mural. And then two dudes walked by, and one dude told the other dude, yo, what they doing out here? And it was in the middle of the night. He was like, oh, that's the mural for Big Pun. They do it every year. Do you believe it's 2 years since he died? And it just ricocheted like an echo in my brain that just said, 2 years, 2 years, 2 years, 2 years, 2 years. And I woke up right there. I had a depression right there. I said, oh, no. I got crazy overweight. I never used to drink before that. I was drinking a bunch of liquor. Man, it was destroying my life. So, you know, I'm able to tell people, look, I came out of it.
I'm so thankful that you speak about this, Joe. I really, really appreciate it.
We definitely got to talk about night school. That's the
whole...
Well,
so, that was the next thing.
Night school!
That was the next thing.
September
28th. Let's do some introductions. My name is Carrie. I'm here to make a little extra cash so that I can afford this warrant that I got. But that's none of y'all business. Welcome to night school.
I was cracking up.
No, night school's so funny. It's a bunch of guys going back to school and ladies to get their GED. And Tiffany Haddish is the teacher.
You all should be very familiar with the Pythagorean theorem, all right? Say it with me.
Pythagorean theorem.
That's how you say it?
And it is hilarious.
We love Tiffany.
And this is one of the only big movies coming out that has two Latinos in the forefront.
They had the wrong guy.
You got Fat Joe, of course.
You sure you cool, or do we need to just chill and wait for you to make a new shank?
Please continue with the Pythagorean theorem.
And then you got a guy named Al Madrigal. If you see how hilarious this guy is, nah, you got to see it.
He's been on our show a
Kevin,
lot.
Him and Kevin Hart going at it like crazy. And I'm like, this is hilarious.
You're having a good time being an actor, though.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. We've been acting our whole life. So what happens is the camera's on now.
Joe, it was fabulous speaking with you. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Rapper and actor Jose Antonio Cartagena, a.k.a. Fat Joe. He's in the new film Night School, and his new album, Family Ties, will be out later this year. This episode was produced by Janice Yamoka and edited by Marlon Bishop. The Latino USA team includes Miguel Macias, Sofia Paliza Carr, Antonia Cerejido, Maggie Freeling, and Sayer Quevedo. Our engineers are Jeannie Montalvo and Stephanie LeBeau. Additional engineering this week by Rebecca Weinman. Our production manager is Natalia Fidelholz. Our fellows are Virginia Lora and Jesse Alejandro Cottrell. Our interns are Paula Moura and Comis Johnson. Our theme music was composed by Zenia Rubinos. If you like the music you heard on this episode, check out latinousa.org and see our weekly Spotify playlist. I'm your host and executive producer, Maria Hinojosa. Join us again next time, and in the meanwhile, look for us on all of your social media, and I'll see you there. Ciao!
Latino USA is made possible in part by California Endowment, building a strong state by improving the health of all Californians. The Annie E. Casey Foundation creates a brighter future for the nation's children by strengthening families, building greater economic opportunity, and transforming communities. And Heising Simons Foundation, unlocking knowledge, opportunity, and possibilities. More at hsfoundation.org.
Am I doing it right?
Lean back. That's right. Say my people don't dance. We just pull up our pants and do the rock away.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA. You can buy cat food or sofas online, but how do you get that stuff? The often invisible link in the supply chain, warehouses, and the people who work there. That's next time on Latino USA.
Hey, it's Guy Raz here. And on the next How I Built This, how Sandy Lerner helped launch one of the most successful tech companies in the world, Cisco Systems, why she had to leave it, and how she went on to remake herself again and again and again. You can find How I Built This wherever you listen to podcasts.